Thank you so much for joining us today. You're listening to Corrieton Cast, the official podcast of Corrieton Church. Parents, what does it really mean to raise children with character? You're listening to Dr. Rocky Ramsey's sermon, Teaching Children Character. In this message, you'll learn 15 things that godly, biblical, Christian parents should be instilling in the next generation.
You know, kids, remember the old Art Linkletter, Kids Say the Darndest Things program? He'd interview these kids. Well, here's some things kids said in reply to questions they were asked on these exams. A medical question was this. Problem. You said, read each of the problems and come up with a solution. Problem, you fell down on the playground and scratched your knee. Solution, get up and deal with it. Okay. When a child swallows a cleaning product, why should you give them milk? Remember, these are kids' answers. To make them happy before they die. Bob has 36 candy bars. He eats 29 of them. What does Bob have now? Diabetes. Financial question. I earn money at home by, fill in the blank. The kid wrote, I don't. I'm a freeloader. Question about color. What is your favorite hue? The answer was Jackman. That's an actor, Hugh Jackman, for those of you who live under a rock. Okay. Zoology question. Name six animals that live specifically in the Arctic. So he's looking for six different kinds of animals. And the kid puts two polar bears and four seals. Pretty clever answer. History question. What ended in 1896? 1895. Where was the American Declaration of Independence signed? At the bottom. Imagine that you lived at the same time as Abraham Lincoln. What would you say to him or ask him? I'd tell him not to go to a play ever. All right, funny kids' answers. Who parents are and how they live is the most important ingredient in who a child becomes. I'll say that again. Who parents are and how they live is the most important ingredient in who a child becomes. What you say is important, but it's not nearly as important as what you do and who you are. It's important to have your kids at a good church, but a good church is not a substitute for a good parent. If you had to choose good church, bad parent, or bad church, good parent, take the good parent every time. Now, because this is true, if you're an adult with kids looking for a church, you shouldn't pick the one that the kids think is best for them. You ought to pick the one that's best for you to grow spiritually, relationally, emotionally, personally. Because you, being who you ought to be, is going to affect them more than some church they go to. Right? Got Brandon right here on the front nodding his head. Parenting, like most other areas of life, requires some planning. You've heard the expression, failing to plan is like planning to fail. How children turn out is almost never an accident. Children tend to become who they're raised to be. The tricky thing is they learn more from watching us than they do from listening to us. Words are important. Actions are more important. So good parenting, like all good planning, begins with the end in the mind. In mind, what do I want this child to become someday? That's where I start. Not right now, in the moment. Who do I want them to become? What are the character qualities I want my child to have in his life when he leaves home here? So this morning's message, again, is the fifth of six on parenting. It includes 15 things that I suggest you teach your kids. Going to begin with the verse we read last week, Deuteronomy 6, 5 to 7. Moses tells them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. In other words, you're teaching all of the time. You don't have sessions where you sit down and teach. You're teaching all of the time. You're teaching at the dinner table. You're teaching in the car. You're teaching on vacation. You're teaching all the time. The first thing your child needs to learn is obedience. Obedience. They're going to spend their whole lives either obeying God, people, and rules, or they're going to spend their whole lives paying for not obeying God, people, and rules. It's that simple. Last week, we looked at Hebrews 12, 6 to 11. We saw that God disciplines those He loves. He corrects bad behavior. Of course, elsewhere, we know He rewards good behavior. This is how the world works. Bad behavior gets punished or corrected. Good behavior gets rewarded. A lot of kids are growing up with the belief that any behavior gets rewarded and bad behavior never gets punished. A child who doesn't learn to become obedient becomes his own worst enemy. I said last week, there will be this war of wills to the finish. If you win, they win. They become the person they ought to be. Society wins. You're not sending a jerk out into the world. The church they go to wins. God wins because they got a better chance of becoming who they're supposed to be. But if you lose that war of the wills, everybody loses. They lose. Their life will be a mess. You lose because you'll be in pain over their life all of your life. Society loses because we got kids who don't know how to behave. And God, in a sense, loses because they never become who He made them to be. Now, we're all broken by sin. All of us have this tendency to rebel inside of us. We're like the kid graduating from high school. He said, I'm tired of people telling me what to do. I'm going to join the Marines and get married. I'd say to him, the Marines will be the easy part. You're going to obey or you're going to pay. You got to write that down. Obey or pay. That's how life works. Number two is honesty. Teach them to tell the truth, even when it's inconvenient. John 14:6 tells us that Jesus is the truth. Look in your outline. Titus 1:2, God who cannot lie. Hebrews 6:18, it's impossible for God to lie. Psalm 31:5, God, the God of truth. John 8:44 tells us that the devil is a liar and the father of lies. Revelation 21:8 tells us that all liars will miss heaven and hit hell. Every one of them. So you got to teach them to tell the truth, even when it costs them. Even when a lie will get them out of some trouble, teach them to tell the truth. We tell our kids, whatever you've done, it won't get you in nearly as bad a trouble as if you lied to us. It's part of how we did it. Number three, teach them gratitude. Teach them how to be grateful. In Luke 17:11-9, Jesus heals 10 lepers. Only one of them comes back to thank Him. Being grateful motivates others to be generous towards you. I like to help people. Watch this. I don't do it to be thanked, but I like to be thanked. I don't do it to be thanked, but I like to be thanked. And if somebody's not grateful, I'm not motivated to help them again. I'm pretty much probably done. I'm guessing you're like that too. Thank everybody for everything they do. Every time the server comes to the table, thank you. Thank the person who, every time somebody holds a door for you, thank you. Every time somebody lets you into traffic when you're merging, thank you. Now, it's bad now because we've got all these mafia windows you can't see through, but, you know, normally you lift your hand up just to say, thank you for letting me in. Thank everybody all the time. Be grateful. Grateful people are far more happy than people who feel and act entitled. Number four, kindness. Teach them to be kind to everybody. To be kind to those they work with, go to school with, to strangers. I was at a hospital this week waiting on an elderly receptionist to give me a room number. Elderly apparently refers to anybody older than you are, okay? So this lady was elderly. She probably was 20 years, well, she was 15 anyway, maybe 20 years older than me, I don't know. Her computer wasn't working. And she tried, and she tried, and she tried. And so I'm standing there for probably literally 5 minutes. It may have been more. Now, on the outside, I'm idling. On the inside, I'm stripping gears, okay? That's just my nature. Eventually, she calls the hospital operator to get the room number, which I could have done at any moment. And as soon as I knew she's in trouble, I thought about it. But I thought, if I call this number and kind of just do this, she's going to feel bad about herself. And so I waited and I waited and I waited and I waited till she called and got the number. That's just being kind. Didn't know 2 days later it happened at the bank. And somebody couldn't get the numbers up they were trying to give me. And it just, I wanted to yell back there, "What on earth are you doing?" But I didn't. I just stood there patiently. I was being kind. She was trying her best. I didn't want her to feel bad because she was trying to help me. Teach them to be kind. Jesus put it this way, Luke 6:35, "Love your enemies and do good, for your reward will be great, and you'll be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men." Now we'd think, well, yeah, it's right to be kind to good people, but He tells us to be kind to ungood people. Don't miss what I'm about to say. Being kind is about who you are. It's not about what they deserve. Being kind is about who you are, not about what they deserve. They may not deserve for you to be kind to them. It doesn't matter. You don't do what they deserve. You do based on who you are. That's the way character is. Character is about who you are. It has nothing to do with what others may deserve from us. They may not deserve anything. They may deserve something bad. But we're not going to jeopardize our character, because this is who we are. It's who God told us to be. So kindness. Number five is compassion. Put on, Colossians 3:12, put on a compassionate heart of compassion. James 5:11, the Lord is full of compassion. Teach them to care about people. Every person is created by God, loved by God, and matters. Jesus died for the sins of the whole world. And by the way, none of us deserved it. Being compassionate is about who God is. It's not about what any of us deserve. Being compassionate is about the kind of person we are, not about the kind of behavior that others elicit from us. It's about who we are. Our Christmas parties, if you're new, and this Christmas will be the biggest Christmas you've ever had. Just count on it if you go to our Christmas party. We've given over $1 million away the last 20 years, all this stuff to these people in need. Last year, I guess we did Newport last year, or actually up toward Johnson City. This year, we're going to London, Kentucky. Again, people who are wiped out by the floods. And what your children will learn is how to give, how to care about people who have needs. And you can do this, if you've got the means, you can do this personally with your family. Find some family who has a little of nothing and give them Christmas. And let your kids do it. Let your kids hand their kids gifts. You teach them how to be compassionate. And you teach them how to care about everybody. Number six, keeping your word. You teach them how to keep their word. We talked about this last week, so I won't say much, but Psalm 5:4 says, this is the man who lives in the presence of the Lord, 15:4, excuse me. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. In other words, if he said he'll do it, he'll do it after he wishes he had never said he'd do it. He says he'll do it, he no longer feels like doing it, but he still does it because he said he would do it. He keeps his word. Look at Numbers 23:19. God is not a man that he should lie. Has he said, and will he not do it? Or has he spoken, will he not make it good? So we're to be like God. If we say it, we do it. It's shocking the number of people who will say things, that they'll do things, that they never end up doing those things. 30 years ago, we had a Sunday school party, and there were about five or six people who were supposed to bring chicken, and none of the chicken people showed up. I'm in therapy for that to this day. You got to let it go, Rocky. You got to let it go. Now, I'm not in therapy. I have let it go, but what I just told you is a true story. They didn't think, well, I can't be there. I'm going to the colonel and find somebody who's going, and I'll give them my chicken to take. No, all they thought about was themselves. I hope your children don't learn how to do that. All they thought about was themselves. Keep your word, even if it costs you. Number seven, faithfulness. Teach him to be faithful. Faithful to God, faithful to family, faithful to friends, faithful to your church, faithful to your job. Proverbs 20, verse 6 says, many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? Who can find somebody you can count on? All kinds of people say you can count on them, but who can you find that you can count on? You know, in days past, if you got a job, you worked there until you retired. If you went to college to play a sport, you graduated from that college. If you went pro and signed a contract, you finished with that team. Too many people nowadays are only faithful, they're only committed to themselves. And so with the NIL especially, you got a bunch of kids at UT now, and they're going to be going in and out like a revolving door because they're not committed to the University of Tennessee, they're committed to themselves. And UT is just a means to an end, and the end is now money getting paid while you're in college. And that's not a good thing. Teach them how to be faithful. Over and over, the Bible tells us that God is faithful. He rewards faithfulness. Turn your Bibles to Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, verses 5 to 8. This is the part of the Spirit-filled life section. In chapter 5, verse 18, he tells us to be filled with the Spirit, and then he tells us how Spirit-filled people behave. And he goes through marriage, and he goes through parenting, and he goes through being a kid, and then he goes through employment. We're in the employment section, verses 5 to 8. Slaves, employees, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, respect, fear, in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ. Be obedient to them as to Christ. Not by way of eye servants as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. With good will, render service as to the Lord, not to men. Knowing that whatever good thing each one does, he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. So what's he saying here? We're told to be faithful at work. We're told to work as if God himself is our boss, to see our jobs as just another way that we serve the Lord and obey Him. Faithfulness almost always gets rewarded. But look at verse 8. There he tells us, even if they don't reward you, I will. God says, if they don't reward you, I will. So he may reward you through them, or if they don't, he'll reward you around them. But the bottom line is, if you're faithful, God's going to reward you. Here's the eight, number eight. The word is effort. 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 Teach your children how to work. It's sad that you got kids now, you know, been the old days, pretty much everybody grew up on farms. And there are people that are my age and older who, you know, milk cows in the morning, walk to school. They came home from work and had 2 hours of chores on the farm. And now we have kids who do nothing. They do nothing. And parents feel good about them doing nothing. Our goal is to make it as easy as possible for them so they don't have to work like we worked. Well, working like you worked had some advantages, not just disadvantages. So we got to teach them how to work. Got to teach them how to work hard. Too many kids, their only responsibility is play time and screen time. Look at these verses, Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Somebody hires you to mow their yard, do the best mow job they've ever seen. Somebody hires you to wash their car, make it the cleanest car they've ever seen. That's how I got money, all from when I was a kid up through high school. I could mow yards and wash cars because I did a fantastic job and people wanted to hire me. If I'd done a lousy job, I'd have had no jobs and no money. My mom sure didn't have any. Proverbs 22:29. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He'll stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. Somebody skilled what he does is going to have some real advantages in life. Listen, life is full of hard things. They have to learn to do hard things, to endure hard things. If you protect your child from doing hard things, what you're going to end up with is snowflakes. You're going to be in therapy and probably living with you far past their should have been out of the house age. Because they don't do hard things. And when life is hard, they crumble. They got to see a therapist. The Carson Newman, they got to go to the puppy room. Because college is a lot of stress. Oh, you think college is stress? Well, you get a real job. And they don't have puppy rooms. They need to learn that hard is never a stop sign. It's never a stop sign. If something's, the fact that something's hard is not why you decide to do it or not do it. What it's worth is how you decide to do it or not do it. And if it happens to be hard, it's just hard. It's not as easy as something else, but you're still going to do it because it's what you ought to do. It's a part of life that you just work and get through. Effort. Have them hustle. You hire kids to do stuff for you, and I've had great luck with kids here at the church, but you know, sometimes you get some kid, hey, you want to come over and help us do this? They come over, and in 10 minutes, you know you're not going to ask them again. And in 10 minutes, you know, this kid's a hustler. He's got a bright future. Effort. Number 9, resilience. You got to teach them resilience. Resilience is the ability to withstand or recover quickly from difficulty. It's emotional toughness. Life is full of letdowns and difficulties. You'll never be successful at everything all of the time. The best baseball hitters strike out. The best basketball players miss shots, miss important shots. The best quarterbacks throw interceptions. They all do. The question is, can you be resilient? Look at Proverbs 24:16. A righteous man falls 7 times and rises again. He may get knocked down, but he's getting back up. He's like that old inflated clown you used to have as a kid. Remember you had that old inflated clown? You'd punch him and he'd go to the ground and bound right back up. That's what a righteous man does. That's what you teach your kids to do. They're not quitters. They get back up. They can go through something hard. They're going to be okay. They're going to make it. Why? Because they've learned to be resilient. A person has to learn resilience if he's going to enjoy life. Since he's an imperfect person living with other imperfect people in an imperfect world. Number 10, teach him to care about the forgotten. Teach him to care about the forgotten. Let me illustrate this. You're at a gathering. Corton's got talent, vision, momentum. And there you are. You get there, and there's your friends. So what do? You huddle up with your friends. If you have the kind of character that I'm talking about on this one, you're not just huddled up with your friends, you're looking around, you're checking the room out. And you're looking for somebody who feels like they don't belong there. They may be a different skin color. They may be younger or they may be older. For some reason, they're the odd man out. Maybe they don't know anybody, they're brand new. And so what you ought to do is care enough about people and forgotten people that if need be, you'll leave your group and go over and make sure that they feel included. And the obvious thing to do is go get them. Hey, I'm so-and-so. Come join us. And bring them in and include them. Just imagine if everybody did this at church. For the most part, we come in, we find our seat, and we sit there. Kind of like a wooden Indian. Everybody in this room ought to sit down and look around. And you're looking for somebody who looks like they don't know what they're doing. They don't know where to go. They don't know what's going on. They're probably new. And you ought to go up to them and say, hey, I'm Rocky. Who are you? First time here? No, I've been coming here for 2 years. You'll get that. It's okay. Say, well, I'm glad to meet you. I'm finally glad I got to meet you. But you'll find somebody else. When people come to a church, the first thing they want to know is, does anybody care that I'm here? And a lot of people, especially in big churches, can go in and nobody does. We're all just stuck in our own little worlds. When ever I'm out and I see a Down syndrome kid, I always make a beeline to them and talk to them. Or some other severely handicapped kid in one of the wheelchairs or whatever else. I always go talk to them. You know why? Because to most people, they're invisible. People don't want to think about it, don't want to deal about it, don't look. If we don't look, they're not there. No, they are there, and they're real people. And God loves them, and He created them, and Jesus died for them, and you ought to care about them. And you ought to teach your kids to care about people like that. care about them for God. Number 11, teach them to do the right thing. To do the right thing. Not the easy thing, not the popular thing, not the most beneficial to them thing, the right thing, what they should do, what God would want them to do. Often what we should do is not what we want to do. It's what we ought to do, but it's not what we feel like doing. So what do? We do what we ought to do. Well, you mean to tell me you do what you ought to do when you don't feel like doing it? All the time. I did it for 2 years. I came to work when all I wanted to do was just go somewhere and hide and cry. You do what you ought to do. What's hard? It doesn't matter if it's hard. It's what you ought to do. Psalm 15, again, is about the man who lives in the presence of the Lord. Look at 15, verse 2. He walks in integrity and works righteousness. He does what he ought to do. He does the right thing. Micah 6, 8. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God? What's the Lord require of us? To do the right thing. Justice, kindness, humility. Teach him to do the right thing. The fact that it's hard is irrelevant. Some things are hard, some things are easy. Number 12, teach him to pay now and play later. Talked about this a little last week. If you work hard on the front end, you'll have a better walk with God, better marriage, better career on the back end. Pay now, you can play later. If you play now, you pay later. And the later you pay, the more it costs you. This is confirmed in Galatians 6, 7. Do not be deceived. Whatever man sows, this he will also reap. You know who you will be someday? Listen, young people especially. You know who you will be someday? The person you're becoming right now. The person I am, I started to become as a senior in high school, Central High School. I didn't just wake up one day being this, whatever this is. I made a decision that I was going all out for Jesus, and I've been doing it since then. Paid on the front end. Knowing the Lord, knowing His Word is so easy to me. You know why? Because I started when I was 18 years old, maybe 17. Teach your children to pay now, play later. Number 13, teach them to live a morally exceptional life. A morally exceptional life. If they do, they will get noticed. A lot of people who claim to know the Lord, they doubt His love, His wisdom, and His goodness. See, that's what Adam and Eve doubted. Does God really love us? If He does, why wouldn't He let us have the fruit of that tree? He's really not that good, is He? And every time you want to toy with sin, it's because you're doubting God's love. Does He care about you? His goodness, is He good? His wisdom, does He know what He's talking about? And the answer to all three of those is yes. So these people, rather than delighting to do God's will, they live their whole lives trying to find out how much they can get away with and still make it to heaven. In dating, the magic question, how far can I go before God's angry with me? How about this? How good can I be that Jesus would be completely pleased with me? That's a whole different question, isn't it? One, I'm trying to get away with everything I can get away with. The other, I'm trying to give to Jesus the best man I can give Him. How far can I go? How little do I have to do and give? Well, what do I have to do if I become a Christian? That person's trying to figure out how low is the bar? What's the bare minimum I can do? Now I can go to heaven, but I don't have to change my life. The question is not, can I? The question is, should I? The question should never be, is it okay? The question should be, is it best? The fact that, quote, everybody else is doing it and everybody else never is, should never be an issue. The issue ought to be, what does Jesus want me to do? If you live like this, you know what you do? You give God the best version of yourself. You'll one day give your spouse the best version of yourself and your kids and your grandkids, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't, all those people get robbed. Because you're not giving the best version of yourself. You're giving a compromised version. In 1 Corinthians 6:12 and 10:23, Paul tells us that we should do what is best, not what is allowed or legal. Write this down somewhere. Just because I can doesn't mean I should. Just because I can doesn't mean I should. I can yell at my wife, doesn't mean I should. I can be mean to my kids, doesn't mean I should. There's a whole lot of things I might be. If I live in Colorado, I can legally smoke pot. Doesn't mean I should. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. We're not to live a what can I get away with life. We're to live holy lives. We just sang about it. Holy means wow, morally exceptional lives. So we're told in 1 Peter 1:15, like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves in all your behavior. Number 14, teach them to live above your critics. Teach them to live above your critics. We talked about being resilient. So life knocks you down, you get back up. But also, they got to learn how to survive people not liking them and saying things about them. The only way to avoid criticism is to be nothing and do nothing. You're going to get criticized. Sometimes you're doing exactly what you should be doing, but people are going to criticize you. There are people who would rather, if you're successful, there are people, far more people who would rather criticize your success than do the work that you've done to get have that success. That's just the truth. Jot down 2 Timothy 3:12. All, that means everybody, all, every one of them, every single cotton picking, as we say in Skip, one of them. All who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. If you really walk with the Lord, somebody's not going to like you for it. I assume we'd all like for everybody to like us. Jesus was perfect. People hated him. He said if they hated him, they'd hate us if we served him, if we were like him. In Matthew 5, 10 to 12, Jesus said that we're spiritually blessed when they do. Well, people are really criticizing me, lying to me, lying, saying things about me that aren't true, et cetera, et cetera. God says, you're blessed. You're going to get a reward for that. Look at Romans chapter 12, verse 17 through 19, then I'm going to jump to 21. Romans 12, 17 to 19, then 21. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. If possible, which means it isn't always, as far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. Now stop right there. How many of you, when somebody hurts you, you want to make them pay? Come on, raise your hand. Remember, all liars are going to hell, so get your hand up. Yeah. But just because we feel like doing it doesn't mean we should, does it? Well, it's hard not to. Just because it's hard doesn't mean that's what we all do, does it? See how this all ties together? And he says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. We're to overcome bad behavior with our good behavior. Evil, watch this, is their character. Being good is ours. Never let their character determine yours. Never give power to people who hurt you over you. See, that's why you've got to forgive people. If you don't forgive people, you give them power over you. You stay angry. And so the last person on earth you want to have power over you has power over you. So you got to let it go, just like the chicken. I had to let it go. So we just keep on doing what we should do and being who we should be, even though what they're doing is wrong. We don't get our own revenge. We never pay back evil for evil. We overcome evil with our good. You'll never be successful if you allow the opinions of others to paralyze you. Teach them to live above their critics. Last one, number 15. Live by wisdom. Teach them to live by wisdom. Look at Proverbs 14, 16. A wise man is cautious and he turns away from evil, but a fool is arrogant and careless. He's arrogant and careless. Jot down Proverbs 22:3 and 27:12. And there it says prudent, which is another synonym for wise. Prudent is a word for wise. Both of those verses say that a prudent man sees evil and he hides himself. He avoids it. The naive proceed and pay the penalty. Most of life turns out how it should based upon the decisions that we have made. Say that again. Most of life turns out how it should based upon the decisions we have made. Anybody whose life is good can tell you why. You know somebody's got a good marriage? Ask them why. They can tell you. We did this, we did this, we did this, we did this. We didn't do that, we didn't do that, we didn't do that, we didn't do that. Successful people can tell you why they are. It's not an accident. They can just wake up one day and life was that great. No, they had a plan. They used character to achieve that plan. And now they're at a great place and they know why they're there. They know what they did right. None of them did everything right, but they all know what they did right. On the contrary, people whose lives are not very good, none of them can hardly ever tell you why they're not. They think it's somehow fate that some people do really well and other people don't. Galatians 6:7 says, you reap what you sow. People have good lives have sown good stuff and they're reaping it. People have bad lives have sown bad stuff and they're reaping the bad stuff. Got to live by wisdom. Well, the question begs to be asked, where do you learn wisdom? From the God who is all wise. You admit that you know little and recognize that God knows absolutely everything. See, the fool's arrogant. He thinks he knows a lot and he doesn't. He thinks he's more mature than he is. He thinks he's smarter than he is. No, if you want wisdom, you come to God and say, God, I just know little. I just know enough to get me in trouble. I need your wisdom. Jot down Psalm 111:10 and Proverbs 9:10. Both verses tell us that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. In other words, we come to Him and say, God, I don't know. You do. Help. Those who think they know it all fail to go to the one who does. Those who think to know it all fail to go to the one who does. Young people, listen up. The older you get, the dumber you'll be, and the smarter your parents will be. I know right now some of you think they fell off a turnip truck. You wonder how they ever got through elementary school. But as you get older, you're going to think, boy, my parents are pretty smart. They're smart right now. You're just not smart enough to recognize it. And right now, you think you kind of know everything. We did too. I mean, we're not picking on you. We all did. But I'm just telling you, you don't. And you'll be smart to gain some wisdom from some people who do. And of course, one of those is God. When I know I don't know, I seek out someone who does. So you get it from God. Then you also get wisdom from people who are ahead of you in life. People who are more spiritually or emotionally mature than you are. People who have more experience than you have. There are a whole lot of things that look really good on paper, and they're a disaster. But when you look them up, but write them down on paper and think about them, they go, this looks like a great idea. It's a terrible idea. That's one of the reasons you ought to be in a community group. Because you talk about things. And there's something, you got some kind of thinking going on. You go, hey, I'm going to do this way. This is a good idea. And then somebody in your group shares a story about how they did it that way and what a terrible idea it is. And you learn from them. So community groups, you don't just learn from the Bible and God, you learn from each other, from their experience. We're told in Proverbs 1:8, hear my son, your father's instruction and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Why? They have more experience. One of our favorite places is the Canadian Rockies. We went there this summer and we'll be back. We'll go back. And you can just say, well, I'm going to go to the Canadian Rockies, rent a car and drive and I'll just find out what's up there. Well, you can do that, but you'd be smart to talk to somebody who's been there. And they'd say, go here, don't go there, do this, don't do that, stay here, don't stay there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jot down this somewhere. Wise people seek the wisdom of others. Wise people seek the wisdom of others. Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived. He told us in Proverbs 11:14 and 24:6 that victory or success comes through an abundance of counselors. So watch there. Here's the wisest man in the world, and he's telling us to seek the wisdom of others. The more you seek the wisdom of others, the more it says about how wise you are. If you're one of those people, you just figure it out yourself, do what you want to do, and you don't ask anybody else because they might not say what you want them to say, then you're not a very wise person. Ain't going to pay a lot of prices. You're going to have a lot of pain that you could have avoided. The foolish don't think they need anybody else's opinion. Wise people know that they do. Now look at what Paul tells us in Romans 16, 19, and 20. These are incredibly important verses. Verse 19, I want you to be wise in what is good and innocent in what is evil. Verse 20 says the result, the God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet. Notice that if we do what he's telling us to do, God will crush Satan under our feet. That sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? But if we ignore what he's telling us and end up doing the opposite, we'll end up crushed under Satan's feet. He tells us to be wise, to be experienced in what is good. And he tells us to be innocent, to be inexperienced in what is evil. Being wise and good is staying away from anything that might get control of you. Porn, immorality, alcohol, drugs, other things. Being wise in what is good is avoiding every appearance of evil. 1 Thessalonians 5:22. It's not giving the devil an opportunity. Ephesians 4:27. Wisdom is fleeing temptation as Joseph did, instead of flirting with it as Adam, Eve, Lot, and David did. They all became experienced, wise in evil. Wisdom is getting as far away from sin as you can and staying there. Wisdom is getting as far away from sin as you can and staying there. What we want to do is flirt with it. We know you shouldn't go off the cliff. But rather than staying away from the cliff, we get as close to that cliff as we can get without falling down it. We're flirting with sin. Being innocent and good and wise in evil is flirting with temptation. It's being where you ought not be. It's being with who you ought not be with. It's looking at what you ought not be looking at. It's doing what you ought not be doing. It's putting in your body what you ought not be putting there. It's underestimating the power of Satan and temptation. Write this down somewhere. Flirting with temptation is signing up for bondage and walking into your own spiritual slaughter. Flirting with temptation is signing up for bondage and walking into your own spiritual slaughter. Satan will crush you under his feet. So what should a parent do? Well, make your list. You may add a lot of things to this, of what you're going to model and teach and impart to your kids. Give thought to it. What are things we can do that will help them to learn these characteristics? And what are things that we cannot do, because if we do, it will work against what we're trying to teach them? So we can't do that. We can't model that. We can't say that. We can't use that. In America, I'm just going to throw, I'm old, I'm a preacher, I've got time, I can do it. Megyn Kelly. Anybody not recognize the name Megyn Kelly? I love her commentary. She's Catholic, claims to be a Christian. She's got the filthiest mouth of anybody I've ever heard, just about. She's like a fifth grader who just discovered cuss words. And she claims to be a Christian. That is Christianity in America today. That's why the church is morally impotent in our society. Morally impotent. You can't model stuff that you don't want your kids to do. And what a horrible example she's setting for kids and anybody else who listens to her. And she has such good things to say, but I'm about done with her. You got to live out what you want them to learn and how you want them to turn out. That's the whole thing. From the beginning, this is what we're after. This is how we're going to do it. This is what we're not going to do because it'll hurt what we're after. See? I've said this, I'll say it again next week probably. Your job is not to raise kids who think you're the greatest. Your job is to raise kids who everybody else thinks they're the greatest. If you want them to think you're the greatest, just let them do whatever they want to do and give them everything they want. Even though studies have shown that those kind of kids eventually hate their parents. There's actually been a study on it. But that's not what you want. What you want is to do the battle, the war of the wills with your kids. But one day your kids are out there and everybody meets them and says, boy, I met your daughter. Oh, she's just wonderful. I just love her. I met your son. What an incredible young man. What a morally exceptional young man. Et cetera, et cetera. Make sense? And by the way, if other people think your kids are great, you did a good job. Final thing. Never parent for the moment. Here's parenting for the moment. You're in a grocery store, you got the two-year-old, he sees the candy bar, he wants the candy bar, so what's he do? He begins to pitch what we used to call a hissy fit, okay? He is complaining, whining, he may do the collapso where he hits the ground, his body's quadrupled his body weight. What he's doing, he's training you. He's training you to obey. And what you'll see most parents do is parent for the moment and get him the candy bar. And what the parent needs to do is say, if you don't get up right now, you're not getting the candy bar either way. And when we get home, you're going to regret you ever wanted that candy bar. In fact, you may never want a candy bar the rest of your life. You can't parent for the moment. You raise a monster. You parent for the man. You parent for the woman you want her to be someday. Not for the moment. And there'll be awful moments. You'll hate it. They'll hate it. They'll cry. You'll cry. But you're doing the right thing. You're trying to raise a kid who has a chance of being a godly kid and somebody who will do well in their life no matter what they choose to do. You keep your focus on that. Not how they feel at the moment, well, they're unhappy with me. Not how I feel at the moment, well, I feel sad because they're sad. And see, when you do that, you just give them away. You don't teach, what you teach them is all the wrong things. Teaching the right things is hard. Some of you just have babies. If we really understood the responsibility before God and how hard parenting was, we wouldn't sign up for kids. We'd just go, that's a lot of work. You know, you're single, you just do whatever you want to do when you want to do it. Then you get married, you can pretty much just two of you do whatever you want to do whenever you do it. Then you have a baby and your life is shot. Right? For the next 20-some years, your world, somebody's got to revolve around that child. It's work. It's not a puppy. It's a person. It's a lot of work. You keep your focus on the man or woman you want to become. Never sacrifice your kid's future for the present. There are a lot of not feeling good at the moment experiences on the road to your child becoming the person that you want him or her to be.
Character is not inherited. It is taught, modeled, and reinforced. Now that you know these 15 characteristics, we hope you'll share this sermon with your spouse and talk about how you can accomplish these things. Well, we hope you enjoyed today's message, and if you did, why don't you join us for a service in person this Sunday? You can find directions at CorringtonChurch.com. We've got childcare, age-specific small groups, coffee, great biblical preaching, Christ-centered worship music, and more. Bring the family and come see us at 10:15 this Sunday morning.